Welcome to Compelling Change, a radio show on webtalkradio.net. Hello, I'm Jeannie Marshall, personal development consultant and coach, and the producer and host for this series. Today's sponsor is Marshall House. During today's show, I'll be speaking with Tom Caney about leadership development and coaching. And I will have a closing empowering practice. This is a suggested technique that will come from the discussion that's about to happen. Today's show combines three favorite things of mine: leadership development, coaching, and Tom Caney. And all three have been important throughout my career. I was a coach before coaches were called coaches in business, and I myself don't always use that term coach. I've used coaches and I've coached coaches, and many coaches I've known have chosen incredibly interesting names to reflect their unique styles and offerings. So coaches are very different from each other. We'll talk also about leadership, leadership development, leaders, and other aspects related to development that coaches get involved in. Now, as you listen to this show, you'll have your own ideas about leadership and leaders and leading and leadership development and coaching and all the aspects of coaching. You bring those to the show. While you're listening to our conversation, also listen to your own inner conversations. And I suggest you identify a specific situation. Any situation will do. It doesn't need to be a problem, but a specific situation. Because with your own personal situation in mind, our conversation will have deeper meaning to you. And so now I want to introduce my guest. Tom Caney has had a long career as a senior vice president of human resources in major corporations, where his personal influence and strategic thinking have been felt both within the company and more broadly to the wider HR community. Most recently, he was Senior Vice President of HR for the biotech company Medarex and Senior Vice President of HR and Strategic Planning for the Fortune 20 company GlaxoSmithKline, or GSK. Tom has done what many high-level executives have done after retirement from the corporate world. He has become a much sought-after consultant and coach. He's currently managing partner of a Philadelphia-based consulting firm, McKnight, Caney, Brewer. He's co-authored the recently published book, Leading Strategy Execution. Welcome, Tom. I'm delighted to have you as a guest on my show today.
Hello, Jeannie. Glad to be here.
Well, Tom, today we'll talk about coaching and leadership development in business. But first, let's talk a little bit about you, who you are as a person. How do you define yourself?
That's a profound question to start with, Jeannie. On the fact level, I am 64 years old. I have two children, both in college, a 25-year-long wonderful marriage, and I have many hobbies and have always lived a very balanced lifestyle by choice and by effort. I continue to do that. It's extremely important to me. At a personal level, I define myself, particularly at this point in my life, with the experience and hopefully wisdom that I've acquired, as someone who wishes to help others to develop personally, in their career, professionally, and to manifest what is often to them hidden capability or hidden capabilities, hidden strengths, in a way that they feel more fulfilled, they can do more in terms of their strengths and abilities in any sphere of life, even though the organizational focus tends to be where I work or where I start working and with whom I work. I also feel that with the experience I have, I can particularly help executives and leaders in various circumstances. And we can talk about that a little later, what I mean by various circumstances.
Yes.
I guess in that realm, and I'll leave this word for us to discuss later, a mentoring role. I'd like to talk about that vis-a-vis coaching, but that's we can discuss that in a few moments. So I also regard myself as a spiritual person, somebody who has been on a quest all of my life, at least my adult life, to understand myself, understand others at a deep level, and to know more about what our purpose and meaning is as humans, and particularly what one's gifts are to be manifested in any context, be it work, family, life. And in that quest, I think I've developed some insights that I can share and help bring forward in others.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that terminology you've used of hidden strengths, finding hidden strengths. There is something very unique about that ability in you for people to become aware of those and even express those. You were also a coach and one who hired coaches long before coaches were called coaches in business. And so I'd like to move into hearing a little more about your perspective of this dynamic we've called coaching.
As you said, Jeannie, looking back over my career, and particularly working from the platform of human resources, I've had a tremendous opportunity to interact with many levels of persons in an organization, many types of people, teams, top teams, people at the shop floor. And I've always paid attention to the dynamics within the organization and between people and within teams in terms of how people handle themselves, and I'll use the term again, manifested their true selves in terms of authenticity, genuineness, and to put an alternative to it, in apolitical versus political ways, which affect the way in which people interact constructively. And of course, we know many teams and many top teams have difficulty in that area.
Yes.
And it boils down to individual ways of seeing their roles in relation to each other, which gets further into their own sense of self, their own sense of security, and their own sense of personal power and capability. And I don't mean power of position, but you know, self-empowerment. Now, you asked the question about coaching. Like you, I never heard the word coaching until, you know, I don't know how long ago, maybe 8-10 years. And it became very popular. And there's a downside of that I'll mention in a moment. And highly used, particularly with individuals preparing for larger roles, as well as individuals that were having difficulties. There were two kinds of coaching going on in the early going, and one was kind of fix-up coaching. Somebody's derailing, somebody's not performing, somebody's struggling in a role, or there are individuals with high potential that the organization would wish to help develop more quickly, accelerate their abilities, prepare them for larger roles. coaching is as good a word as any, in my opinion. I come from an athletic background. I've coached in the sports sense. I've certainly been coached. I've worked with many types of coaches, some very helpful and motivating, some actually harmful in terms of, performance and motivation and the way people felt working with them. So coaching's fine. Mentoring, I know we're differentiating a lot these days between mentoring and coaching. I think it's a bit artificial. I really think the word mentoring is more precise in terms of how I have felt about coaching and continue to feel about it. The other thing I'll say about coaching, which is a bit of a concern, there's so much going on with the perceived value and need and certainly opportunity for building a career in coaching that many, many individuals are gravitating toward it. There are the many certification programs. I've been part of some. I've taught in some. Many are very good. The only problem I see is that a lot of the coaching approaches that you read about, learn about, or that even are performed in the certification programs are methodology approached. And I think coaching has to come from one's own development. It has to come from the inside out. It has to come from the wisdom accrued through a fair amount of personal experience in life. And I don't mean you need to be an older person. I think it's a matter of who you are in this world, who you are in your life, and of course what you know in terms of techniques and methodology. But it really comes from a deep inner place if one is to be an effective coach. So the main thing I want to point out there is that our self-development as persons is so important to helping others and developing others that's where I hope the focus on coaching and developing coaches is moving. And I sort of see that, and I sort of don't. So it gives me pause about, this idea that we called coaching, this process, this business of coaching.
Yes, absolutely. And I just totally resonate with what you're saying. And I know for my own work, I have struggled with that and have landed on the side of adding the "and coach." So I call myself personal development consultant and coach. And I vary it. And there's a big difference between consulting and coaching, except when it's somebody who has this depth of experience that you speak about, that to easily move from one to the other, to be a mentor, to be whatever you need to be when you're in that role with a client is perfect. And so as you think about yourself as a coach now, what is the primary message you're giving yourself when you sit with somebody, whether that's in person or by phone, doesn't really matter, but when you're in that role as coach, mentor, or whatever the name, what is it you're saying to yourself as you interact with that person?
Again, Jeannie, a great question, and gives me pause to reflect. I think maintaining an inner awareness of what's going on in me with the person as I listen deeply, I remind myself almost mechanically to listen deeply. And what I mean by deeply is to understand the words that are being used, the way they're being used, the style in which they're being used. I think with certain tools in mind, I will tell you I have used for years the Myers-Briggs typology. And I use that as a bit of a filter to understand where are they coming from? Are they do they need to have a fact-based approach? Do they need to have an engaging approach first? and, you know, to try to tune into that. The word I like to use is attunement, as a way to be with the individual. So in a very positive way, I would say I'm extremely self-conscious with the individual and what's stirring in me. And that includes the sometimes encountered negative reaction. This is a person not like me. This is a person who is difficult. This is a person who is resistant. Therefore, I'm not feeling engaged. That reminds me to switch channels and think about and then work with what else would engage this person. And of course, there are those clients who really are going through it mechanically and don't wish to be engaged or have been forced to. And we have to recognize that too.
Absolutely. So, and I would like to come back to this idea about attunement. I want to take a quick break first. We have a commercial break to do before we get into that. But let's really revisit that idea, because I think it's a very powerful one for coaches to understand. I am talking with Tom Caney from McKnight Caney Brewer, mkbpartners.com, on the internet. And we're talking about leadership development and coaching on compelling change.
You are listening to Compelling Change, sponsored by Marshall House. Are you seeking a life that is well-grounded in purpose, yet you feel unsure how to create such a life? Are you ready to make a powerful change in your life? Call personal development consultant and coach Jeannie Marshall for deep and lasting transformation. Jeannie partners with you to tap into your powerful intention and authentic actions to increase satisfaction in all aspects of your life. You choose the subjects, and Jeannie identifies the most efficient and effective methods that align with your purpose for a more satisfying life. Draw on Jeannie's deep knowledge, wisdom, and experience. Visit Jeannie's website at empoweringpersonaldevelopment.com for a variety of resources and additional information about her coaching and consulting. Life is more enjoyable when you embrace your authentic self.
And so now back to my guest, Tom Caney, who is a longtime expert on coaching by whatever name it's used. And Tom, just before the break, you mentioned attunement, and that was really in response to my question about what you say to yourself, and I loved what you said about being a real listener. And that just seemed to naturally go to this idea of attunement. So I wonder, will you explain a little more about what you mean by that?
It has several levels of meaning to me, Jeannie. To back up a second, I've been asked to describe, even by clients or organizations or sponsors of a coachee, what kind of coaching do you do, Tom? And I describe it clearly as whole person coaching. And of course, that sometimes becomes a bit confusing, particularly to, you know, business people. And I describe that the experience of being coached and helped to develop is a process of building insight and awareness and facilitating that coming forward within the individual, and to help the individual not just look at the context of their job, their challenges, their career opportunities, the organizational environment, the relationships with their boss and peers, and all of that, which is very important, but to use the term, where they're coming from. And I mean that, where were they born? How did they grow up? What significant experiences have they had in life? What has shaped them? what is their current situation in family, friends, even finances and the structure of their lives. And integrated with that, not separate, is what is the meaning of all that in your business life? And what do you strive for in your career and your role in your organization?
So as you, as the mentor or coach, are attuned to that, or are you attuned to yourself as you become aware of these dynamics in others?
Let me answer that with a quote that I love and I use fairly frequently. Scott Peck, who's a well-known author, wrote a book, The Road Less Traveled, which is a great read, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
And he defines the act of love, but he's not talking about romantic love. He's talking about human love between persons, the love of giving and caring. He describes that as finding what's great in another person and holding it up to them until they demand it of themselves.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful concept, and more beautiful when you actually do it, because there is lip service sometimes paid to that. Now, one of the things that I know about you, Tom, is that when you sit with people and you are in your totally congruent, aligned space, you are authentically you, then others can more easily be authentically themselves. And in a sense, they are attuning their own energy while they are in your space, and you are well attuned. And then all of this is happening. It's not so much about doing particular methods to make it happen. There is a consciousness in which you move, and you are totally aligned or attuned with who you truly are, that gives permission to the other person to be who he or she truly is. Does that make sense?
Jeannie, I first of all take that as a tremendous compliment, because we know how each other do our work to a great extent. I would say that is as good or better a description than I can give. I would add an idea that attunement means to me that I have to be conscious of who I am while I'm with that person, because that changes.
Yes.
That person affects me, I affect them, and I want to emphasize something you implied, if not said. There is a consciousness and an energy transfer that goes on between two people in all interactions. That energy can be channeled, it can be purified, it can be resonant with the other individual, and I hope I'm not being too cosmic about this, but it's the words I use with myself when I'm with them. And I do change my behavior and my mode of interacting according to who they are. One of the things that I work with in myself and with the other person is to be a mirror for them. Mechanically, to give you an example, I sit with them in a way that they sit. I phrase my speaking in ways that they phrase it. And I'm very, very aware of doing that. Now, again, it sounds mechanical. To some extent it is, but it helps me move into their space.
Yes.
And move out of my space and become more selfless in the process.
Yes.
So that might be another way to describe the idea of attunement, and calibration is another word that I might use.
Yes, absolutely. And this all takes place by your knowing it, although sometimes you may not be so aware of it. For example, if you notice a disconnect, that may seem difficult to notice that, but you are probably tuning into that individual's disconnection or whatever's going on with that person. So sometimes this dynamic that you speak about can be jolting or uncomfortable to you, I'm sure. But as you're aware of it and you're really creating a new space, an energy field, I like to call it, that the two of you are creating, in which something powerful can happen, does happen, because you're holding that space for whatever the change is that the individual wants. So it's a very powerful gift, and the words are not easy to describe. And both of us, I think, are trying to find descriptors that make sense. But it's really ineffable. It is something that is there or it isn't there. And in you, it is there.
Well, again, thank you, Jeannie. I will say that where there is a point of disconnect, or many, or a series, or whatever, and particularly in the earlier going, that's more common, so both parties feel much more comfortable and engaged. And the tendency I used to have, and what I've seen and heard about in other coaches, is an urge to fill a void. A client does disconnect. They might still be verbalizing, but you can just sense they're disconnecting. My technique used to be to push for a reconnection, and the pushing actually intensified the disconnect in me and in them, because now I was being very conscious. I wasn't listening. I was pushing for my point, and I was feeling like I'm losing them. I need to drag them back in. What I do now is I just go silent, and if there's a significant pause, I just hold my energy with them to invite them, without using words, to come forward. Or they may need to think, or they may need to reconnect within themselves to get back into the process.
And I think what you're speaking about, Tom, is really helpful for coaches, also for clients of coaches, to understand. And I'll put some different language to it, but the idea is that in the silence is the wisdom. And the words may help us to get there. I mean, here we are, we're communicating, we're using words. But there is something that happens below the surface of the words when there is change that's taking place. And it's precisely one of the reasons that I start this show asking the listeners to identify a particular situation. Now, you and I don't know what those various situations are, but if they have a situation in mind, then these ideas that we're talking about will have a totally different meaning to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's in the silence. It's that opportunity to pause, to breathe, and to trust the process. And I think that with long-term experiences, you learn to trust the process much more and to let it be whatever it is. And I think that that really speaks to an important dynamic that you bring to the table, whatever table you're sitting at.
Yeah, while you're speaking there, Jeannie, I had an image. I'm a musician, as I know you know, Jeannie, and the thing that is important to know about music is it's not always the notes. It's the space between the notes.
Yes.
That makes the music.
Yes.
And the metaphor for me there is it's the space between those energy movements, those energy gaps, the energy rising and falling that one needs to pay attention to and work with and be conscious of one's own feelings and anxieties surfacing during those interstices that go on in the building of the relationship and the conversations.
Yes, and to recognize that the changes or the learnings take place on so many different levels.
That's
and to really just give the space to allow that to happen. And I think that the kind of coaching that we're really talking about right now is of working with people who really are ready for deep and wonderful change. And you spoke in the first part of the show about basically two different kinds of coaches, the fix-up coaches and the fix-up the person because the person is seen as broken coach. And the other one, those coaches who are really supporting high potential people, in other words, people who are already successful, wanting to go to the next level and do it with a partner. And so I wonder if you might say a little more about that.
Yeah, it's an important point, I think. And I'll start with a statement that a very good friend of mine who is a very high-level, high-powered executive coach, a statement that she holds to. And her statement is, I only work with the athletes. I only work with the Olympians, meaning the people who really have very significant potential, great interest in their own development, a reasonable amount of ambition, and are pretty highly placed. And that's the level at which she works. I get that. I think it's great. And I've worked with other coaches who say, I don't do fix-ups. I don't do salvage work. I only work with people that really want the coaching and have a good chance at developing and using my services. I agree with all that, and that certainly is my preference. It's a lot more fun, and you can usually see a lot more results earlier. I do want to say that an organization is not going to spend money and time on a person who is derailing a performance problem, a behavioral problem, unless there's some interest in that organization for having this person change. Otherwise, they're pushed out, fired, whatever. So there's something there. There's some kernel of potential, whatever that may be. It's all distorted by performance and pressure on the individual to change and that kind of thing. So I work with those situations willingly. And what I find is, indeed, they're so off track. I'll never use the term broken because people are not broken. People develop at different ways at different times and in different contexts. In one organization, they're broken. In another organization, they're a star. I've seen that happen. But if I run into a person who's having trouble and struggling, and I can help them bring forward the nature of the inner struggle going on, and we can work with that, I would say I've had more successes than failures in helping that person regain their footing, get some traction in their career and their job, work with their boss in a more constructive manner, work with their colleagues in a more constructive manner, or those other elements that derail them, unless it's technical skill or whatever, where they just don't have the competency to go to the next level or to do the current job. So I don't favor this growing notion that we only work with high-potential people. Think of the service that we provide to an individual if we can help them turn around by building their own self-awareness, developing themselves, moving to a next level in their whole life, I'll use that term again, and redeeming themselves in life and career. There couldn't be a greater service to another individual than providing that kind of development to the individual.
I totally concur, Tom. And I think that sometimes that kind of change can also be very fast, because when a coach does the kind of listening that we were talking about earlier, that client may never have been listened to as deeply before, and change happens in that space. I think also when you, as a coach, as a mentor, are open to working with different kinds of people, you bring more to each situation. And so I really applaud that in you.
Jeannie, let me just say and say to your listeners that in my own journey, and we have been talking about the journey of self-awareness being so essential to be good coaches and good leaders, you yourself have played a very important role over the several years of the coaching that you provided for me at a very deep level that was of enormous help and many lessons learned and much growth during periods of struggle and opportunity and success and, if not quite failure, difficulty, I would say. So you've traveled, you know, a significant segment of my journey with me and been a tremendous help, and I just want to thank you for that while we talk about working from within with other people.
Thank you, Tom. I really, really appreciate your saying that. It has been a delight to walk with you and with the many people you have recommended working with me over the years. So thank you. And Tom, we're going to take a break now. This is Jeannie Marshall with Compelling Change Radio on webtalkradio.net. And I'm talking with Tom Caney, who is a whole person results-oriented coach. Very powerful designation.
Are you ready for empowering personal development that makes you the priority? Jeannie Marshall, personal development consultant and coach, has developed programs that can help you to move from where you are to where you want to be. Visit ByJeannie.com. Do you feel stuck or discouraged? Let the Balance Your Energy or Find Your Center in the Midst of Chaos program activate the flow of energy in all parts of your life. Do you want to experience words flow through you as you write? Practice the techniques in the Energy Work Visualization for Writing program. Do you want a boost in confidence? Let the confidence of feeling good guided meditation lift you up. Jeannie's practical tips provide a roadmap to empowering practices for life. These personal development programs are available at byjeannie.com. That's byjeannie.com.
And now back to Tom Caney. And we have been talking about coaching, and we want to talk a little bit now about leadership, leadership development. I guess in many ways we've already been talking about that as well. And as I've been thinking about this conversation, Tom, I've thought about the many individuals I have learned from, and it occurred to me to just ask intuitively, who might I bring into this conversation? The person who comes to mind is Rosabeth Moss Kanter, and she has written many books. She's highly regarded, and I was very influenced by her work, Men and Women of the Corporate World. And she wrote that in the late 70s, and very, very powerful understanding about one of the things you said earlier, Tom, really having to do with interacting with people, that all that happens in organizations that's really successful is based on people interacting with each other. And one of the things that Rosabeth Moss Kanter said is that leaders are more powerful role models when they're learning than when they're teaching. And I just think that that is a wonderful concept that is also part of what we're saying right now, that out of the learning you've had over the years, you bring something to the table that's so different from you're just trying to teach people to do things differently. Do you have any comments about that?
First of all, I'm familiar with Rosabeth and her work, and like you, I've always admired it. I think she was well ahead of her time. If you connect the two dots between Rosabeth's work, and you mentioned it was back in the 70s, and some current work that is done by persons like Daniel Goleman with emotional intelligence, I think we're seeing a flourishing of this awareness of the need for, to put a label on it, emotional intelligence as a mode of being and a mode of leading. There's two other quotes that I like. One is we can only lead others as far as we have come ourselves, which, of course, implies that, once again, our own awareness, our own development, and the manifestation of our wisdom is really what engages others. The second quote is again from Scott Peck, and he says, true engagement with another requires a demonstration of vulnerability. Now, to me, an executive who is a learner implicitly is demonstrating vulnerability.
Yes.
In that they don't know it all. The mode that they may operate in when they're in a learning process is one where they're disarming to some extent. They're asking questions rather than giving direction. And I've seen this a number of times, not just in coaching situations, but with individuals I regard as great leaders. Another term I might use for it is humility. I've seen leaders go from being highly authoritarian and directive to open and humbled by failure. I think failure is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
For many people.
Yes.
All people, not just leaders, but leaders live, and I often talk to leaders about this because they sometimes don't think about it. They live under a microscope. Literally the kind of shoes and belt they're wearing are noticed by people. And sometimes helping them be self-aware that every move that they make is symbolic and it resonates throughout the organization.
Absolutely. And when they are aware of those other dynamics, people are far less interested in the shoes and the belt.
Exactly right. I call it the shadow of the leader is more what creates an image of leadership than the immediate thing that the leader is doing or saying. So it sort of gets back to attunement, Jeannie, and I do admire the work of Goleman. He's sort of codified these ideas and made some of them practical, which I think is a wonderful contribution. And the neat thing about it is a lot of leaders read Goleman.
Sure.
So there's a lot of ways to internalize these ideas and hopefully act on them. But many people get information and don't act on it. And I think there needs to be a catalytic process like coaching, which goes deeper and brings it forward and helps the individual bring it forward in themselves.
I think that the mentioning of self-awareness is so important because then leaders become self-aware leaders, obviously. And we don't just talk about leaders at the very top of the organization. People can be leaders any place they show up. And so as you think about developing leaders among the people you're working with, beyond this self-awareness that is an integral part of your work, what are some of the other dynamics or attributes that you are looking at or looking for or looking with?
Well, the qualities or the traits that to me, manifest movement within the person. I'm using those words very carefully, movement within the person, manifest frequently as humility, genuineness, authenticity. Now, these are all words that have different meanings to different people. On a more mechanical level, the willingness to work with other levels in the organization, to not insulate themselves, to be aware of power dynamics that go on within them toward others because they hold that power, and others are very sensitive to it, as we know, and the power dynamics among their team, and to work with those and manage those, not just the substance and content of strategic planning or business development or, you know, the the hard side of, you know, profitability and growth and shareholder interest, all of which are absolutely critical, but they're outcome measures. They're not leading indicators. The leading indicators is how leaders behave to get those results. In this very difficult economic environment, I'm beginning to see organizations sort of bifurcating into, crudely put, winners and losers. And we've seen a lot of research that shows that a differentiator is the level of engagement by leaders with their workforce in more genuine and trusting ways that empower the whole workforce to work together in a unified direction willingly and with discretionary effort, which is all catalyzed through leadership. Others that are working in the sort of old telling and selling, authoritarian, hierarchical modalities without a lot of genuineness, even human contact, meaning insulation of leaders at the top, really haven't generated the kind of engagement, coordination, collaboration, teamwork that is so important to succeed in today's business environment. And it's a business issue.
Yes. Now, when you talk about power dynamics in a group, what are some examples of the power dynamics that tell you this group is working? And also, what are some of those power dynamics that tell you, ooh, there's work to be done here on this? So well, yes, go ahead.
Let me start with the ooh part. I've worked with quite a number of top teams and been a member of those teams, so I was enmeshed in the power dynamics, including my own. Sometimes I think defensiveness, sort of as a hair trigger, if you cross my line, you cross my turf, you are more expert than me, you show me up, you compete with me, meaning people on the same team, holding different functions at a high level. When it gets acted out in things like back-channeling, in other words, not putting the issues on the table, but talking about other team members or the boss or going to the boss to talk about another team member offline in a way that discredits that person, sometimes very subtly said, sometimes very overtly said, and I call that back-channeling. Another one is sniping. You know, it's very typical among top teams, particularly, you know, mostly male teams, which they still are, to get into the testosterone battle and, you know, cheap shot each other. Somebody says something and somebody sarcastically comes back and says something that's meant to be funny, and it's really a way of bringing down the other person. And it's all dysfunctional. It all interrupts, you know, the dynamics of the team and the way they could interact if they were a little more aware of themselves. That's where good team building can bring forward a lot of awareness in the team about how they're interacting and behaving. When it's facilitated by a consultant, usually an outsider to the team, by the way, sometimes, most of the time, an outsider to the organization, which I advise, it's because that person has generated authenticity in themselves and has come from a deep place of their own awareness as well. So I know we've been talking about individual coaching, but the similar dynamic can, you know, be very helpful to a team when it's enabled by a person who has that technical skill, but also self-awareness. Because no matter what, they are modeling and they are, you know, moving into a shared consciousness with that group. They are the leader, they are the CEO of the event, and coaches, providers, team builders have to be as aware when they're dealing with those group dynamics as they do when dealing with the individual.
Yes, absolutely, and organizations are made up of people. Without individuals, there is no organization. Without individuals, there are no groups.
Right.
And so it does all work together. And the team building idea that I thought about as you were talking, when I used to do team building, there's a phrase that came to me in one of those events that I often think about when a team is having problems. And that is, it's very simple. We are all in this together. And when people really feel that, not just the words, because they're simple and they could be any number of other ways of stating that, but when you really feel that as a team, we are in this together, there can be no backbiting or any of the other indicators that you were mentioning earlier. We are in this together.
Right.
When a team knows that, when the leader feels that, has really embodied that, then everybody grows from that experience. And that doesn't mean there aren't arguments or differences. Without the differences, everyone's redundant. So we need the differences. We need the opportunity to discuss ideas in order to grow. But there's a way of doing that, a consciousness that is so important for our leaders and for our organizations.
That's absolutely right, Jeannie. I think the art of it with the individual who's coaching the team is to bring them to that awareness individually and collectively through various forms of guiding the team, teaching the team, having the team do exercises that bring forward awareness, and then the early indicators to me that we are in it together is individuals start putting their so-called secret agendas on the table, such as, you know, I've been feeling this way for a while about the way we interact. I've been very hesitant to say anything because I don't want to invite criticism or feel vulnerable. I've actually heard these so-called confessions made, you know, when the team is brought to a certain level. And the really neat thing to see when that starts breaking through is it only takes one person, and really if the CEO does it, it happens more quickly, to put the real issue on the table. And it invites others to say, well, here's how I feel, or here's what I've been experiencing the team, or here's where I feel threatened. The other thing which you sort of mentioned is, well, you mentioned leadership happens at all levels, and when I talk to individual employees at whatever level, and we get into a discussion about management, leadership, I put forward the notion that you're a leader in your job. You're a leader of other people by the way you behave. You're probably a formal leader in certain circumstances, like a project team or something. So let's start thinking about being a leader, and let's not think about being led and being a victim of other people's leadership, so to speak. So this, I'm totally congruent with you, Jeannie, on leadership happening at many levels in the organization and helping people operate from the position of, I am responsible for the good of the team. We're all in this together. And this can be on an organization-wide basis, not just a team basis. Leaders are at the very top, are people too. They have the same vulnerabilities. They have the same sensitivities, the same fears, in many ways more so because of the enormous pressures on them collectively and individually at the very top. They just have bigger sticks to fight with. And they're not hesitant to use them because they're usually fairly assertive, if not aggressive, individuals. But there is the danger of team fragmentation at a greater level than sometimes you see at lower-level teams.
And Tom, that's a wonderful segue into mentioning your book, Leading Strategy Execution. And you also have a two-day workshop that is available under that same title. At your website, which is mkbpartners.com, people can download the brochure for the workshop. And as I recall, Tom, that's available either for a company to hire you to come in or to have a public workshop on that subject. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, great. And you also have an offer for a free download of the first chapters of that book. Would you like to describe that, please?
The offer of the first three chapters, at one level, and just being honest, is a way to have people take interest in the book and hopefully buy the book. So that's part of our motivation. The other part really stems from a shared value that my partners and I hold, you know, very dearly. And that is that we need, and I mean the collective we need to publicly share our wisdom. Now, the world of knowledge and the world of technology is moving so fast that if we don't have a way of publicly sharing what we know and creating collaborations of learning, so to speak, I think we're not doing the service we can do to society. So we have a giving back ethic, I guess I would call it, within our group. We want people to get our information. You'll see on the website there are a number of blogs. We're not very hesitant to give away our methodology. As a matter of fact, the book itself is what differentiates the book about, you know, the various strategy execution books, of which there's still far too few, is it's kind of a how-to book. It's a what-to-do and how-to-do-it book. And if you read the first three chapters, it will be very easy to pick up that it is all, strategy execution is all about people. It really is about engagement of people in all the various processes, what I call hardware processes, like things like onboarding and succession planning and people development and rewards and that kind of thing, and the soft processes, which we call how one must win hearts and minds to align people within the organization and have them apply discretionary efforts to their job. So it, in some ways, it's a how-to book rather than a book of philosophy about. And the last thing I'd say about it, why is it important to us? Why is it important to leaders and readers? Strategy execution, according to studies by the Conference Board over the last 10 years, has surfaced in the last 4 years as being the most important topic on the minds of CEOs in global organizations, not just in the U.S., because strategy has to adapt and be flexible, and how do we keep people aligned through change and all that's affecting the dynamics of organizations today. So we saw that as, okay, if that's really important, then who's talking about how to do it? And we find that there's too few people doing it. It's a people-centered book for leaders generally, or people who can affect strategy execution, and HR people too, about how to get it done and done through people. So that's the focus of the book. But I think one could pick up that theme pretty quickly reading the first three chapters.
Excellent, Tom. And it is a wonderful book. And you can get those first three chapters as a PDF download by going to mkbpartners.com. And I've been speaking with Tom Caney, who is a whole person results oriented coach and mentor who brings much to the corporate world and to individuals. Thank you so much, Tom, for being my guest today.
You're very welcome, Jeannie.
And so I want to close this hour by telling you very quickly about an empowering practice. And here it is, and it is about self-awareness. And that is a very simple question, powerful but simple, so that as you're going about your day, you're thinking about your life, you're engaged with people or not engaged, if you ask the question, who am I? And listen for the answer. There may be one, there may not be one, and then ask again, who am I? It's not a question I'm suggesting you ask once a day. I'm suggesting you ask that to yourself throughout the day, and you will find that you have greater awareness of who you are. And so again, I want to thank my guest, Tom Caney, for being on today's radio show. You can always get to the radio show at compellingchange.com. My guest for next week is Steve Toth. He is a radio show host himself and will be talking about to be or not to be on radio. And so until next time, thanks for listening and make this a compelling day.